The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Kiplinger.com, The Retirement Guide, Kiplinger Magazine, Apple News, and Centennial Money Magazine. Our first article from Kiplinger.com, when is travel insurance worth it? Know when you need coverage and when you can skip it. Now that Americans returning to the U.S. from abroad are no longer required to test for COVID-19 before boarding a plane, you might be wondering whether to pay up to insure your trip. Travel insurance often seems like an unnecessary cost, particularly when fares are refundable or you don't have to pay a change fee. But there are situations when you must have it, as well as times when it's not required, but is worth paying for. Some credit cards provide insurance, but the coverage is limited. By contrast, comprehensive travel insurance policies cover a wide range of expenses. A comprehensive travel policy typically covers damage to rental cars, trip cancellation, lost baggage, and medical expenses when you're abroad. Most comprehensive travel insurance policies now also include cancellation and medical benefits related to contracting COVID-19. But for other COVID-related concerns, such as border closures, quarantine restrictions, or fear of contracting coronavirus, you'll likely have to pay for what's called a cancel for any reason, or CFAR upgrade. CFAR travel insurance can tack on an additional 50% to the cost of travel insurance, but it offers better protection for travelers facing the kinds of interruptions that the pandemic has made commonplace. Some plans with quarantine coverage will also pay some expenses if you have to stay in place for additional days. Coverage is typically limited. For example, you might be reimbursed $200 per day for two additional days of lodging if you're required to quarantine abroad. How much travel insurance cost? Well, on average, a travel insurance policy costs $248. According to data from SquareMouth, a travel insurance comparison site. But the amount you pay for a policy depends on a number of factors: the length of your trip, the number of travelers you need to insure, and even how old you are. A better estimate is 4% to 11% of the total cost of a trip, experts say. You can compare plans at SquareMouth or Travel Insurance. Choose coverages that make sense for your trip and be sure to read the fine print of any policy you consider. Travel insurance policies generally fall into one of three tiers: basic, middle tier, and comprehensive coverage. Although basic is often the most affordable option and includes benefits such as trip cancellation and lost baggage coverage, it may require that you pay a deductible in the event of sickness or injury. Middle tier coverage typically includes the same benefits as basic policies, but adds a health insurance benefit. A more expensive, comprehensive policy may include the benefits of basic or middle tier policies, but with a higher claim limit. Basic coverage rates average about $105, while middle tier and comprehensive coverage average about $130 and $164, respectively, according to data from Bankrate, a financial website. If you want a CFAR policy too, that'll be on top of those costs. Because older travelers are generally at higher risk of health problems, policies tend to be more expensive the older you are. A 2021 analysis conducted by Advisor Smith, a small business resource website, estimated that average prices differed from a low of $92 for a young child to a high of $805 for a 100-year-old person. The difference between a 40-year-old's and a 70-year-old's average cost of travel insurance may come to about $100. But that doesn't mean older folks can't find affordable policies. Shopping around and comparing plans is key. When to buy travel insurance? As of June 12, 2022, travelers returned to the U.S., returning from the U.S. no longer need to test negative for COVID in order to reenter the country, alleviating fears of being stuck in a foreign country longer than planned. But the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention advises anyone experiencing COVID-like symptoms not to travel. And there are other times when opting for travel insurance is worth the cost. If you're concerned about severe weather, impending your trip, about a possible unexpected health incident involving you or a family member, a terrorist attack, or even losing your job, travel insurance policies with basic travel trip cancellation coverage often cover those reasons for canceling. If you're traveling to a destination that has a history of more stringent COVID-related travel restrictions or has other COVID-related concerns, consider a cancel for any reason policy. Be sure to check the travel restrictions for any countries you're traveling to regularly. Some countries are still requiring travel insurance in order to visit. Plus, there's no guarantee that the U.S. waiver of COVID testing for air travelers returning from abroad is permanent. The testing requirement is set to be reviewed again on September 10th, 90 days after it was lifted. It could be reinstated if there is a new COVID variant of concern and the highly transmissible BA.5 subvariant of the virus has been a growing threat. Whether to pay for travel insurance policy and what level you get depends on your own personal risk tolerance, of course. But it also depends on whether you have to pay a lot out of pocket if you have to cancel or postpone your plans. If you're mainly worried about losing money on costly international flights, for instance, think about that before you pay to insure them. That also goes for travel insurance plans offered at checkout when purchasing a plane or train ticket. Although it may seem like a small expense in exchange for the added flexibility, keep in mind that most airfares already have built-in flexibility. Major U.S. airlines made permanent changes during the pandemic, allowing flexible bookings for most tickets. That means you won't have to pay a fee if you need to change your flight, as long as you don't buy the cheapest fares. Southwest allows free changes for all tickets. Also, some travel providers offer flexibility on bookings made within a certain time. For instance, the major airlines and Amtrak offers a refund in the first 24 hours after a booking if you have to cancel or change your itinerary. Also, when an airline cancels your trip, as long as the flight is arriving at or departing from a U.S. airport, you are legally entitled to a refund per U.S. Department of Transportation regulations. An airline will often automatically issue a credit or voucher for a canceled flight, but be sure to request a refund if that is what you would prefer, as is your right. Also, if there has been a substantial schedule change, typically of 2 hours or more, and you decide not to take that flight, you are entitled to a refund of your fare. Our next article, appearing in the Retirement Guide, is entitled The Power of an HSA, Utilizing a Health Savings Account to Help Pay for Medical Expenses. A health savings account, HSA, is a specialized savings account designed to offer a tax-free way to cover out-of-pocket medical expenses. As with a 401k or traditional IRA, contributions are made pre-taxed or are tax deductible if made outside of payroll deductions, then grow tax-free. An HSA can be a valuable tool in retirement to help cover the cost of medical expenses. Here's how they work and an overview of their benefits and limitations. To qualify for an HSA, you must be enrolled in a high deductible health insurance plan. If you had a high deductible plan while working and started an HSA, your savings can help cover medical expenses even after you've retired and enrolled in Medicare. You'll no longer be able to contribute to an HSA while on Medicare, but you can use your savings to pay for medical expenses. You can make tax-free withdrawals from your HSA to pay for qualified medical expenses like prescription drugs, dental visits, eyeglasses, deductibles, coinsurance, or copays. The advantages of an HSA in retirement. Along with easing the burden of health care costs, an HSA can be a powerful tool for retirement savings. The funds in an HSA roll over from year to year, so you can continue to build on it and maximize your savings as you near retirement. Plus, your contributions will continue to grow tax-free. This is a notable difference from flexible spending accounts, which require you to spend the money down by the end of the year or you lose it. HSA contribution limits. While you can still use your HSA to cover medical expenses in retirement, once you enroll in Medicare, you can no longer contribute to an HSA. Given this limitation, you might want to consider maxing out your HSA contributions as you near retirement to bulk up your savings. In 2022, the IRS contribution limits for HSAs are $3,650 for an individual and $7,300 for a family. If you are over the age of 55, you can make a catch-up contribution of up to $1,000 per year. As you turn 65, once you turn 65, you can withdraw from your HSA savings for any reason. You will have to pay taxes on the withdrawals that don't go towards qualified medical expenses, but you can still access the funds in your HSA to use however you'd like. You can even sign the account to a beneficiary and pass it along as an inheritance. An HSA can be a valuable tool for retirement, helping you cover medical expenses and offering tax-advantaged growth each year. Understanding the rules surrounding HSAs and their contribution limits can help you maximize your savings as you near retirement. Our next article from Kiplinger's Magazine, Earn More with a CD Ladder. Savers are finally getting some good news. Interest rates on savings and money market accounts are climbing. For example, the rate on American Express's high-yield savings account jumped from 0.6% to 1% in a span of 2 months. Certificates of deposit haven't been left out of the rising rate tide, and they're moving up faster than the rates for some online savings accounts. With a CD, you agree to keep your money in an account for a certain period in exchange for a guaranteed interest rate. Terms range from 3 months to 5 years or more. The longer the term, the higher the rate. But you may not want to lock up your money for years. One way to stay flexible is with a CD ladder. Spread your cash among CDs of varying maturities, say 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 years. Some of your savings will capture the higher rates than long-term CDs offer. Each time a CD matures, you reinvest the cash. If rates continue to rise, you'll reinvest the money at a higher yield. You'll earn more if your ladder using CDs at more than one institution, but you'll have to weigh the extra time that you'll spend setting up multiple accounts. If you want the flexibility to be able to cash out a CD before the end of the term, you'll need one with a manageable early withdrawal penalty. Say you open a one-year CD recently yielding 2% at Pentagon Federal Credit Union. If you decide to take the money out before a year was up, you'd lose all of your interest earned as part of your early withdrawal penalty. However, a one-year CD at Capital One, with almost the same interest rate, has an early withdrawal penalty of only 3 months' interest. Pay attention to promotional rates and terms which banks and credit unions use to lure new customers without having to raise rates for current customers. Our next article appeared in Apple News, and it's entitled, "Beware of Scammers Pretending to Be from Your Bank Who Rob You Using Zelle." This article was written by watchdog Dave Leiber. Here's a simple way to avoid the Me Too scam. There's this high school librarian driving down the road, and her cell phone rings. Paige Portell, the Garland ISD librarian, looks at her phone caller ID, which shows that the call is from her bank, Wells Fargo. She answers. The man knows her name, her cell phone number, her school email address, and the numbers of her checking and savings accounts. He even says he knows how much is in each account. He is calling to inform her that she is the victim of a theft in which $1,500 was drained from her checking account. She pulls the car off the road so she can focus. He says he's calling to help get her money back, but the only way to do that is for her to send money back to herself through the bank using the payment app Zelle, and that's spelled Z-E-L-L-E. To verify his identity, he suggests that she look at the phone number on the back of her bank card and see that it matches the number on caller ID. It does. She sends $1,500. Before the watchdog continues, know that the crooks posing as bankers who use Zelle to steal is nothing new. Zelle is a quick payment app. I call it Venmo for adults, owned by the major banks, including Wells Fargo. Fraud has been a problem for years. The problem is so pervasive that federal regulators are working on new rules to better protect victims of this kind of crime. Sometimes banks respond with a too bad, so sad attitude. The man who called the librarian was not from Wells Fargo, yet somehow he knew some of her personal information. As far as using caller ID to make it look like he was calling from the bank, that's called caller ID spoofing, and it can be done through available software. This story contains a super important lesson that should help you protect your money. But first, back to the story of what's called the Me to Me scam, because you're asked to send money to yourself to help catch a crook. Posterius. I know, but it works. Suspicious, Paige calls Wells Fargo to verify the story, but she's put on hold. The scammer calls her. This time it's a woman who assures her she's from the Wells Fargo Fraud Department. Picture Paige on the cell phone, flipping from one call to the other. She's trying to speak to a human at her true bank number. I am screaming into the phone, "Scam! Scam! Agent! Banker!" Flipping back and forth between the two calls, she gets confused about which one is the real banker. Then she makes a mistake that will haunt her. At the scammer's urgent suggestion, she sends another $2,000, this time from her savings. The thing about Zelle is, once the money is gone, it's gone. There's no hold time like with a check. "We're unable to stop or reverse the funds," Wells Fargo wrote to her later. I noticed looking at Zelle's website that the emphasis is using the app to transfer money to family and friends. "Pick someone you trust to pay," it says. send money to almost anyone you know and trust. The watchdog reached out to Wells Fargo and Zelle. Wells Fargo spokesperson Allison Vail said, "When Ms. Portell contacted us about the request that she received, our representatives warned her that she was likely being contacted by scammers and attempted to convince her not to send any additional funds." Paige says that's not how she remembers it. "She told me about the long hold time she had trying to reach an authentic bank staffer who could help her. It's heartbreaking when anyone falls victim to a scam, and it's a priority for us to help people avoid scams," the bank spokesperson said. She continued, "We're actively working to raise awareness to prevent these incidents. We want to make sure that everyone is aware that criminals can spoof a caller ID number so it appears as if a call or text comes from a company or a government agency." Zelle declined to comment on Page's issues, citing security and privacy reasons, and referred me to Wells Fargo. The good news is that the Wall Street Journal reports that federal banking regulators are preparing to prod banks to pay back more customers who are victims of alleged scams on Zelle and other money transfer services. Paige is embarrassed, but still fighting to get her money back. "I teach kids how to learn what's true and what's not true," she says. "Lessons learned here." A police detective who looked into this told her not to feel bad. "These crooks are good," the detective said. "Okay, I promised a super important lesson that is so basic yet it can protect your money. Here it is. When your bank calls you, assume it's fake. Under no circumstances should you engage. Hang up and call the bank using the phone number on your bill or on your bank card. The time when a company calls out of the blue to help you is about over." That's so 20th century. In modern times, you must assume the worst. What an awful way for all of us to live. Our next article is from Kiplinger Magazine. "Yours, Mine, and Ours: A Checklist for Blended Family Finances." When combining finances as a new family, there's a lot to consider to make the best choices. Here are six key areas to focus on. Family finances can prove tricky under any circumstances, but that's even more so with blended families, where two sets of often well-established financial histories and philosophies try to merge into one. At CMAX Financial Group, we've seen a number of blended families these days where people have remarried, either after a divorce or the death of a spouse. Sometimes it's older couples already in retirement. In other cases, it's a younger couple still trying to raise children. But regardless of the specifics of any individual situation, when families blend, so do their finances. And that's when things can get problematic, if careful planning and communication don't happen. The author says, "I know, I have a blended family myself, and one of the first questions my wife, then my girlfriend, asked me was about my credit rating. It was a great question, because if you plan to buy a house together, buy a car together, or handle a variety of issues involving money, both of your credit ratings will come into play. None of this is to say that you should let finances become the final factor in deciding whether to take that relationship further, but you do want to make sure that you have a good handle on the myriad financial issues that can come up. Beyond credit ratings, here's a checklist of a few things to consider. Money habits. People grow up with different thoughts about money, influenced by their parents or by the circumstances of their formative years. Some people are exceptionally frugal, saving every penny and seldom, if ever, splurging on something just for fun. Others spend with abandon, unconcerned about the unexpected expenses life can throw at you at any moment. Many are somewhere in between these extremes. If you're entering a serious relationship, you should talk with your new partner about how each of you approaches spending money. Financial accounts and bills. Once you learn each other's financial philosophy, you will have decisions to make. Should you blend your financial accounts or keep them separate? If the two of you are closely aligned with your finances and how you approach spending, you may decide to just combine everything. If you're older and have adult children from prior relationships and are more financially established, you may decide to keep things separate. For a hybrid approach, may be best. Keep some of the things separate, but have common savings, investments, and household accounts to achieve your blended goals. When there are children from a prior marriage, especially young children, additional financial situations come into play. Does one person owe or receive child support? How does that fit into the overall budget? What's the status of college funding for the children, and are there other obligations related to them? All of these questions should be addressed and hashed out. Also, beyond the financial issues, remember that it takes time, patience, and a concerted effort by everyone to successfully blend a happy family. Understand that it may take longer for some children than others to accept the new addition to the team. Where you will live and what you will do about any houses you already own. The option you choose could come down to a combination of financial prudence and personal desire. You could live in one house and sell or rent the other. Or you could sell both houses and buy a new one, giving your blended family a fresh start. It's also important to consider any prenuptial agreements, especially if significant assets are involved, or if the two of you have large differences in your overall finances. It's important to have common goals for the family and the finances to communicate those goals. A good visual way to do that in a good family project is to create a vision board with everyone involved participating so that all points of view are heard. We have just about run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen to us next time. I'm Larry Wilson, reading on behalf of the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call us 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.